This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Community health centers, the good news, they're still funded. They got their funding. That happened when Congress passed its spending bill last week. But before that deadline, there were some nerves at these local nonprofit primary care providers. And today, there are still many concerns about destabilizing threats to centers, their funding, and the communities that they serve. Texas has the highest rate of uninsured residents in the country. About 1.3 million low-income Texans rely on community health centers as a vital resource. How are staff and services affected in this long-term delay in funding? How can medically undeserved areas like rural areas, urban areas, and with health, maternity care, and the opioid epidemic be improved with community health centers? We invite you to call in. The number is 210-614-8980. Have you had contact with a community health center? What have they done for you? 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. Our guests this afternoon were joined by Jose Camacho, Executive Director and General Counsel for the Texas Association of Community Health Centers. Also with us in studio, Dr. Carlos Moreno. He is a Vice President and Chief of Clinical Affairs for CommuniCare Health Centers here in San Antonio. And Marisa Evans is a Health and Human Services reporter for the Texas Tribune. It's great to have all of y'all with us this afternoon.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you.
So let me start off with Dr. Carlos Moreno in the studio with me today. Tell me about the CommuniCare Health Centers here in San Antonio. These are community health centers. What do you do?
Well, thank you. A little bit of history behind federally qualified health centers. They trace themselves back to the neighborhood health centers that emerged under President Lyndon Johnson in 1965. His administration had the war on poverty. And they recognized that placing medical health centers in medically underserved and health professional shortage areas addressed the primary care needs of communities, addressing acute care, and most oftentimes chronic care, which was not addressed. For CommuniCare, we have been in existence now 45 years, and in 1972, Sister Dolores Giroux, a nun from the Daughters of Charity, a retired nurse and pharmacist, realized there was an increasing health problems, in particular diphtheria, on the west side of San Antonio. So she solicited support and funding to operate a two-exam pediatric clinic in the back of a church to care for children. 45 years later, now we have expanded to 11 clinics. We serve over 62,000 patients, generating 224,000 visits a year. And we have a staff of approximately 430 staff members, addressing the healthcare needs in pediatrics, family medicine, women's health, dental, behavioral health. And we work very collaboratively with specialists in the community, hospitals, and we also provide WIC services at our clinics.
So we had that political kerfuffle up in Washington, D.C., where the right and the left were talking about funding the government or not. And they were talking about CHIP, and they were talking about other things. But community health services, as important as they were, and they were part of this deal, they weren't talked about that much. It was sort of back the part of a lower, way lower in the long stories about what's going on here. Do you think the story of community health centers, it's not that well known in the community if you're not really, you know, directly impacted by them? We need to do a better job of telling your story.
Well, we do have our communities that recognize the impact that we make to those patients that seek our services. We are in Bexar County. We serve Kendall County and Hays. Those individuals, if we were not present, would have no other recourse than to relocate or seek services in emergency rooms, overbearing hospitals at a much higher cost, and then the continuity of care would not be available to them. Because we exist, patients feel more at ease and comfortable in saying, I have a physician. I have a clinic. I have a patient center, a medical home that I can know where my records are kept. So there is continuity of care. And that most often is the most disjointed and most problematic part in trying to treat patients continually and consistently to improve their health in the long run.
Jose Camacho, Executive Director for the Texas Association of Community Health Centers. Can you talk about, I mean, what were there some anxious moments as we were leading up to that funding vote and getting it signed?
Thank you for having me. And the answer is yes, and there still are anxious moments. The larger part of the funding was taken care of in the discretion, funding cliff in the continuing resolution that was finally decided early Friday morning. However, there's still another portion of the funding, $1.5 billion per year, that's in the Health and Human Services budget, what we call the discretionary funding. And hopefully that can be taken care of when Congress approves the next budget resolution by March 23rd.
And over at the Texas Tribune, we're joined by Vanessa Evans, and you've been telling this story, talking about the critical role that the community health centers provide. And what have you seen?
When we wrote our story last week, we talked to a couple of community health centers, and they were just describing how, you know, they're like basically doing calls and pounding the pavement in Washington, trying to get Congress members to understand the severity of delaying this funding. So when you think about community health centers, you're thinking about people who cannot afford private insurance or who are uninsured. So and are able to pay out of pocket on a sliding fee scale. So community health centers offer this really affordable health care for people who need it the most. And without them, you know, our entire health ecosystem, particularly in the state of Texas, where we have the highest uninsured rate in the country, would be devastating. It would really hurt a lot of people, millions of people across the state, because they would not have anywhere to turn to, or they would have to be flooding into emergency rooms in order to get their care. That's not what emergency rooms are supposed to be for.
So we've seen a growing role for community health centers over the past, I don't know, it seems to be that it's gone through a revolution, an evolution, Jose Camacho?
Yes, it's gone through quite an evolution over the 52-year existence of community health centers under the Bush administration. George W. Bush, these health centers were doubled and became really an integral part of the plan to address healthcare needs. Since 2010, we've seen exponential growth because of the trust fund being added in the Affordable Care Act and providing a substantial increase in funding, a substantial increase in expectation for the service integration and quality that we provide.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980, talking about community health centers. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about community health centers. They play a vital role in providing primary health care to many in our community, in rural areas, urban areas, all across the nation, a lot in Texas, many, 1.3 million in Texas. We're joined now by Bella Rubio. And Bella, welcome to The Source. You're on the air, and I understand you're a patient at a community health center.
Yes, I am. I am a patient, and so was my father, who passed away a couple of years ago, and we're located in Real County. We have a clinic in Lakey, where I reside, as well as Campwood in the two incorporated cities. We're located 100 miles northwest of San Antonio, and we are definitely in a very, very rural area. Our closest hospital is an 80-mile round trip. Our second closest hospital is in Kerrville, 150-mile round trip. And as well as pharmacies. We have no pharmaceutical outside of our healthcare clinics. We have no pharmaceutical services here in Riel County. So for me, I have been a patient in the past, but more so for me and my sisters, we were taking care of our elderly father, who the last few years of his life suffered from a debilitating disease, Parkinson's, that eventually led him to not be able to walk. And so we were able to keep him here at home, and the healthcare centers enabled that further than we would have had we had no healthcare clinic here. With Parkinson's and with the extent of his Parkinson's, it is a big ordeal to have to put him in a wheelchair, wheel him out, put him in a vehicle, and he lives 7 miles from the clinic, and then get him to the clinic. So they so graciously said, you know what, it's flu shot time, and they would post flyers throughout Lakey, throughout Campwood, and all we had to do was call and say, hey, you know, is this a good time to bring my father? They said, absolutely, come and come to the back door, ring the buzzer, and we'll come out and give him the flu shot. If he ever needed blood draws for any of his medicines, instead of having to trek 150-mile round trip with him, they were able to do the blood draws. Recently, I had a very, very dear friend whose husband last year was diagnosed with cancer, stage 4, and before he could have his chemo in Kerrville, which is a 150-mile round trip, he had to have blood draws to make sure his blood count was high enough to have the chemo, and they were able to do the blood draws here. His wife was able to bring him to the clinic, to the back door, do the blood draw, send it over to his oncologist, and then get a thumbs up or thumbs down to go ahead and go to Kerrville the next day to have his chemo. So, and then for me, when I have had the flu or another illness and made an appointment and gone to the clinic, and you get your antibiotics right then and there, and you walk out with your antibiotics. I have lived here in this county all my life, and the closest HEB is Uvalde, which is 40 miles one way. I can vividly recall before the clinics opened that I would be grocery shopping 7 o'clock at night during the week, and you'd hear over the loudspeaker, is there anyone in the store from Lakey or from Campwood? Because we have an elderly patient that is in desperate need of their medication. If you will please come by the pharmacy, we're not asking you to pay for it. We'll try to figure something else out. And you, if you, will you please take it to Lakey and drop it off at the sheriff's office, or call the patient and see where they live and take it to them? And that was just a really sad situation for us, because they depended on someone being at HEB grocery shopping to be able to get medication that they needed urgently. And so for us to be able to come to the clinic, get seen, and then by a provider and walk out with your medication is like a dream come true. And because I'm the retired county clerk, our population of Riel County is a little over 3,000. 60% of our population is pretty much ranges in the age of 70 to 90.
Wow.
And another thing that the clinic does that we are just so thankful for, we have two school districts, Lakey ISD, Nueces Canyon ISD. They partner with the school districts to provide physicals for the athletes, so they can all get their physicals and get them all done in a couple of days. And, you know, whether it's to put the football team out on the football field or the basketball, volleyball girls out on the court. Otherwise, they would have to depend on their own parents and transportation to drive them either to Uvalde, like I said, which is an 80-mile round trip, or Kerrville, which is a 150-mile round trip, plus miss a day of school.
So I'm hearing from you that the community health centers, the community part of that phrase, is very important.
Absolutely. It's a lifeline. It is a lifeline for us here in Real County. And if we lose that, it's just people are going to be forced. Some people are going to be forced to move. Retired people, you know, they're not able to stay here if there's not any type of health, you know, providing. And the schools, I mean, you know, they'll have to make some other arrangement. Not only that, we're our big industry in Real County is tourism, as well as hunting. And even when the tourists come up, you know, accidents happen or they get sick or their children get sick and the clinics partner and we'll take those patients as well.
So, so Bella, were you aware that the community health centers were, their funding was in jeopardy?
I was. Like I said, as a former elected official, we try to do everything we can to keep services in our county for our constituents. And so I know, you know, we've been on the chopping block for a while. And I just don't think sometimes people realize that we have so much to lose.
And I guess as a former elected official, you also see this as not a red versus blue kind of a thing. This is a people kind of a thing.
It is not. It is totally an unpartisan matter. In some cases, you know, like I said, it's a preventative too. If you can be seen by a local provider out of the health center, and they can catch an illness early or detect something early, it works as a preventative medicine.
Bella, thank you so much for your story. I appreciate you calling in and helping us understand how community health centers play a vital role in Real County and helping people out there. Let me go to Marissa Evans. She's a health and human services reporter for the Texas Tribune. And Marissa, you all have been doing fantastic reporting about the lack of health care and emergency care in rural parts of Texas and also the aging parts of Texas as well. And we've heard that story with Bella and your reaction.
I was like in shock when I heard her say that they had to say over the HEV microphone, can someone please get this medicine for this older adult who needs their medication? That's just heartbreaking. I'm almost speechless because I just feel like it's one of those things where we so often think about who gets access to healthcare and what do we want to pay for and who don't we want to pay for and who's most deserving and who isn't most deserving. But as I always try to tell people, you don't know until it happens to you or until it happens to someone in your family or your friend where they're struggling to get the help that they need. So, you know, we're reading a lot of stories nationally right now about pharmaceutical deserts. So to hear that that's something that's happening here in Texas is almost not surprising because you don't have enough pharmacies, you don't have enough providers in these areas. And so that's why to have Congress kind of delaying this funding, that's why I said before, it's just so devastating because if that clinic were to go away, where would they go? What would they do? How many people might actually die because they couldn't get their primary care needs taken care of?
And Jose Camacho, Executive Director and General Counsel for the Texas Association of Community Health Centers, when you heard Bella's story, what were you thinking?
These stories are repeated again and again and again in communities all across Texas. We're the folks that are there with integrated services to try to address the needs of the community. What Bella talked about are unique needs of the community that were addressed. But you'll hear these stories, you'll hear about access, about the quality, time and time again in these communities. Unfortunately, Real County is not an isolated instance. You see it in East Texas. You go to Presidio, you see it there up in the panhandle in West Texas. In many places, we're the only doctor in town. We're the only healthcare provider. And as more and more hospitals close, as the providers start to come back into the urban areas, we're the ones remaining independent, pushing them, our providers, out into the rural, out into the underserved communities. You don't have to live in Riyadh County to lack access to healthcare. If you live in a community in Houston or Austin or San Antonio where it takes several bus transfers to get to a doctor, that's one of the problems that we address by being in those communities and serving people, providing access.
And so we're talking about the continued stability and sustainability of community health centers. You said earlier, Jose Camacho, that you're still $1.5 billion short, and you're counting on that money possibly being passed when the next funding vote, next budget vote. Is that right?
That's correct. Of the $5.1 billion, 3.6 were taken care of last Friday. The discretionary amount, the grant program that must be reappropriated every year, is still outstanding because no budget has been approved. I want to say, however, that a previous continuing resolution addressed that portion until the end of March, so it's less of a dire situation, but it's still an integral part. It's a piece of the overall funding picture.
And so we knew that through the story that we're hearing about the evolution of community health centers, that they started out in LBJ and then got a little more funding and a greater ability to do a mission. And then George W. Bush gave them more money. And then we saw it with the passage of the Affordable Care Act. So the question is that many people are concerned that people are going to focus on the Obamacare part of it and think, oh, you know, and get caught into the partisan tribal bickering back and forth. But the story that we're hearing, particularly from Bella out in Riyadh County, is that this is helping people of all stripes, of all needs, in very rural areas where you have a medical desert. Without them, there would be no medical care in that area. Also in urban areas like in San Antonio and communities that are without health care. And we hear a lot of needs for health care here in San Antonio, how that can be a lifesaver. If you got a question or a comment as we talk about community health centers, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. Sheldon, we'll get you on the air when we come back from this break. The number is 210-614-8980. The source continues after this.
In the dispute over border security, are immigrants criminals? Are Border Patrol agents the bad guys? Writer Francisco Cantú's memoir, The Line Becomes a River, addresses this quandary. He's a former Border Patrol agent.
When I joined the Border Patrol, I remember making this argument to my mom that I would be able to help people.
Cantú joins us on the next Fronteras. Download Fronteras wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio is a city. It covers 412 square miles. The current number of primary care physicians and their locations and practices are basically clustered in the northern part, northern quadrant of the city. So public transportation is, you know, limited. It's a challenge for residents who live on the city's east and west side. So one solution that they have for getting primary necessary health care are community health centers. We're talking about them today, the important role that they play, and some of the threats to their stability that exist in federal funding to maintain these important parts of our healthcare system. We invite you to call in. Have you had a contact with community health centers? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Sheldon, we lost you, but if you want to call back, we'll put you back on the air, and our phone lines are open if anyone else wants to call in to talk about that. So Dr. Carlos Moreno is with us, the Vice President and Chief of Clinical Affairs for CommuniCare Health Centers. And so can you walk me through? So we're telling the story. A lot of people don't know about community health centers. Even people who might need those services don't know that they can turn to you sometimes, right?
Well, yes. And let me walk you through how one patient could actually have access all under one roof of six disciplines, six service lines that we have. So we have a pediatric patient, a female, comes in at 16 and wants a pregnancy test.
So where does she go?
She goes, for example, our largest clinic, our where we all started. It's our West Clinic. It's on 1102 Barclay Street. And it is a 40,000 square foot clinic that has six disciplines. Inside, we have pediatrics, family, women's health, dental, behavioral health. We have WIC, and we even partner with UIW's optometry school. So these services are accessible to any and all patients. The one particular thing, when you are a CommuniCare patient, you have access to all 11 sites. So you can be up in Kyle, and you're visiting San Antonio, you get ill. You have access to any one of the CommuniCare because the continuity of care is there, the access through the electronic medical records that we keep on our patients, and the communication between our clinicians makes the access and the treatment plans the best that they can be. So reverting back to, we've been talking about the trials and tribulations we always find in our rural communities, and we also find that in San Antonio, we have been working very collaboratively with the larger hospitals. We've been working with the health department in addressing a lot of the problematic issues that right now plague us. Teen pregnancy and high infant mortality. How can we address that? So at CommuniCare, going back, we have a patient, 16 years old in pediatrics, has a pregnancy test, and it comes back positive. What does she do? The first thing we try to do is intervene and place that patient in early prenatal care within the first 3 months. We follow through, and during that process, we establish education and communication and continuity.
So what if this patient has no insurance?
No insurance. Here's what our center has. We have case managers that facilitate and help those individuals understand what services they may be eligible for. So we ask that they bring their financial records, to bring their proof of ID that they are Bexar County or whatever county they are in.
So financial records sounds intimidating.
Intimidating. Okay.
So
let's
about
say
my
a pay stub to see what their income is.
Okay.
And based on their income, we have a sliding fee scale.
So it can be complicated, though. Mm-hmm. Also, that's like, I'm Absolutely. Living at this house, but, you know, my family, it's a mixed family, and mm-hmm. people are coming and going all the time. And, I mean, and does all that need to be sorted out?
Well, that's why the case managers assist. That's their area of expertise, and they approach the patients in very, very simple forms, trying to get as much basic general information as possible to enroll them. Now, CommuniCare is not a free clinic. We are a 501c3, as most FQHCs are. And based on that, the sliding fee scale can have a minimal cost for a patient of $45 per visit. And that would include their exam, which could include laboratories and some imaging. That's a very good price to pay for all the services that are being provided.
What if I don't have $45?
Well, we never turn anyone away, irregardless of their ability to pay. CommuniCare seeks with those federal dollars to make ourselves as whole as possible to make up for the difference of those individuals that probably will not be able to cover the full cost. So with that, we educate the patients. We engage them in ownership of their care, which is the first and foremost problem. Most oftentimes, the chronicity that we often face and follow our patients with is because they don't come and seek services until it's basically right now in an advanced stage. We try to tell them, just like you take care of your car, you change the oil every 3,000 miles, when was the last time you had your blood pressure checked? When was the last time you had your glucose monitored? So with this type of rapport that we try to create with our patients, we establish continuity. Then comes the next problem, access. Where do these individuals go? So with 11 sites, we give patients the ability to work within their schedule, and our clinics are open 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. So that gives ample time for individuals to try to fit within their schedule time for their care. So we try, again, to crosswalk these patients across all the disciplines without disconnecting them from their primary care source of care.
So Marissa Evans, at the Texas Tribune, Health and Human Services reporter. I know you've also been awesome in covering the maternal mortality crisis. I don't use crisis loosely. I know that's what we have here in Texas. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about a role that community health centers can play in trying to provide the postnatal care that's needed in order to try and make sure that every woman in Texas can have a safe and secure birth?
Well, as was just talked about, you know, community health centers are not just providing care, they're also starting relationships with patients so that they come back for more care. So when you have a woman who recently had a baby, you know, that community health center can actually be there for her, not only reminding her, hey, you have this appointment, but providing her the care and support that she needs. The problem is that we found with our maternal mortality project is not just necessarily that women aren't always going to their postpartum visits, but there's not always a lot of help when it comes to postpartum depression. As we've talked about, you know, a lot of these places are in rural communities where, on top of maybe not having a ton of access to primary care providers or specialists, that also includes mental health access too. So when you're thinking about pregnancies and community health centers, they're really important because, you know, if a woman cannot get her prenatal care or her postpartum care, then that's going to cause problems for not only just her baby, but also herself as she either prepares to have a baby or right after she has a baby.
Jose Camacho, Executive Director of General Counsel of the Texas Association of Community Health Centers. Currently in the United States, we're seeing this major flu outbreak. And I think what this is showing is when we have major gaps in our healthcare system overall, that it allows problems like this to develop and then gallop through the rest of the population. Is that an argument that can be made that we have to provide comprehensive health care to everyone in our population to try to make sure that we don't have epidemics?
Absolutely. Prevention is key. Immunizations are key to stopping outbreaks such as this. We've had several scares in Texas, including the Zika scare that we got over. Thank goodness it didn't materialize to the extent that we had thought it was going to happen. But the last time we had a severe flu outbreak, health centers were right in the middle of it. Overnight, our night clinics were flooded. One of the first cases diagnosed was diagnosed in Harlingen by one of our doctors, even though the patient was not his. Before the health department announced the flu outbreak, we were already in contact with them because we saw the spike in patients coming in. In fact, we worked over that first weekend with the CDC to look at a cluster in the valley. Eventually, we became the outlet before HEB and other stores got online for the strategic reserve being a strategic reserve of antiviral drugs being distributed in Texas. Health centers were providing those out to the general public. We took deliveries from the Department of Public Safety, audited all those records, and returned what wasn't used. But in the early days, health centers are going to see the spike, and they're going to respond. They have systems in place to do so, and that's part of the expectation for health centers, and they do it very well. We've seen it in Katrina. We've seen it in Harvey. We saw it in the last flu outbreak.
Another break. We're talking about community health services centers. They provide medical, dental, vision, and mental health care. Call in as you had if you've had a contact with them and what you experienced. Numbers 210-614-8980. The source continues. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The community health centers, they provide high-quality, affordable, primary, and preventable health care services for people who otherwise may lack access to medical care due to where they live, lack of insurance, language barriers, income level, complex health care needs. It's happening all across the country, all across Texas. It's happening here in San Antonio. CommuniCare Health Centers is a community health care provider here in San Antonio. And with me to talk more about that is Dr. Carlos Moreno. And so when people come to you, how do they find out? I mean, you guys are, you're running on a thin margin. You don't have money to advertise. We're not going to see jingles on you on the TV, you know. So how do you get word out?
Right now, technology. Technology is our best friend. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We are on the internet, www.communicaresa.org. Our direct number is 210-233-7000. We do promotions in the community, especially when we see there's great opportunity to capture and to be preventive. So here's a perfect example. Right now, we're coming close to spring break. So we're trying to connect with our patient population and have them utilize that downtime when they have their children at home to come to our clinics to be vaccinated, to have the wellness checks. Prevention is the best.
So you count on free media to get the story out.
We do.
The local TV news and the newspaper stories and social media and public radio.
Correct. And we also have tried, and we are right now, we have the ability to reach, and the best promotion most oftentimes is word of mouth. One person has a great experience, they'll tell their friends. And the community hears about the great things that are done within their community. So that in itself is what better proof.
Yeah, because that has validity to it. It's
correct.
Like an endorsement.
Correct.
Make another caller on the air. The number is 210-614-8980. If you want to join our conversation as we talk about community health centers, David is on the line. David, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. What I do is I work full-time, work 50 to 60 hours a week. I have two kids, single parent with two kids, and I use CommuniCare. It's great. My kids are under Medicaid, and because I'm a single parent with two kids, it doesn't allow me, it restricts me from getting insurance. Now, my work does offer insurance plan to me, but it's more, I work for a 501(c), and the kind of insurance is just not really good because my kids have pre-existing conditions. So, and if I get insurance from work, they will take away my kids' Medicaid. So I'm in this weird catch-22. So CommuniCare has been a blessing to me, and if it wasn't for CommuniCare, I wouldn't have the regular checkups and things that I need to survive.
So how do you access them? Where do you go?
There's a location on the west side that I go to, and whenever I have a flare-up or a condition with my gout, I go and they quickly, they have all my charts, They do all, for one price, they do all my labs and everything. So they work with my schedule, and whenever I need them, I know I can count on them, and I really can't do that with anyone else for that price.
When you tell people that you get your health care at CommuniCare, do they know what you're talking about? I mean, is it a well-known, established thing?
No, they don't. I mean, it's getting more and more well-known, but sometimes they kind of look at it like it's maybe some negative place or some place that doesn't maybe not a reputable place. And I let them know, like, it's a beautiful place. The people are extremely professional. The doctors and the staff are amazing. And I just reassure them. And I had them look at the website, and they're up with technology also. They have a quick check-in process. They even have an online information, app information. So yeah, they're amazing.
So it sounds like you've been able to sample medical care at different levels, and that you were choosing CommuniCare because it works for you, but you're not sacrificing quality. It's just like going to a normal doctor. But you're going to a normal doctor, but it's just like going to any other kind of doctor.
Exactly.
All right, David, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. So Jose Camacho with the Texas Association of Community Health Centers, how can more people find out about, getting their care at places like CommuniCare at their local community health centers?
Because of our federal funding, we're not allowed to expend money on advertising. So it's through programs like this. It's through reporters with the Texas Tribune, et cetera, that we're able to get our services before people. It's a lot of it is word of mouth. Many times patients don't come to us because they know so much about us. It's the provider of last resort. What community health centers are focused on is keeping that patient because of the experience that they have at the center.
Let's go to another caller, and let's see if we can bring Susie online and click the button. And Susie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Okay. I just want to really quickly touch on something, and I'm not sure how they go about determining somebody's income, but I've called before, and I believe it was Central Med. I don't think it was CommuniCare, but I want to know if they do funding the same way. My son is unemployed. He's 27, so he aged out of being covered by my insurance. They want to use household income to determine what he should pay. He doesn't work, so they try to use overall household income, which is not helpful because I have insurance. I have diabetes. I have high blood pressure. I have high cholesterol. I see doctors regularly. I have hundreds of dollars in insurance costs already. Okay. My other son has asthma, anxiety. So I already pay a lot of money, and I do offer him free room and board, and I pay for groceries and everything. So, them expecting us to pay for his health care, out of our pocket is tough because, like I said, he doesn't get a flu shot every year. He doesn't go to the doctor when he gets sick.
Okay, Susie, thank you for the call, and I think you really bring up a great point about how complicated it can be to deal with situations like this. So, Dr. Carlos Moreno, I can't ask you to talk about Susie's case in particular, but she brings up how, it's a fur ball at times trying to unravel how am I going to provide care for this individual in this complex life that person has.
Right. Well, as this case presents itself, so do so many others. There are those individuals that make $1 too much to be eligible for certain insurances. There are certain individuals that are facing so many other complex costs. And so right now, again, on an individual basis, that person has to come to the clinic to visit with case managers. And we do our very best. We can't solve every single issue that patients may have, but we do our very best to try to enroll individuals, find out which method may be accessible for them to have care. And again, we don't turn anyone away for their inability to pay.
So the caller was at one facility, and then they should try another one and see maybe some, you'll hit upon another case manager who might know the secret formula to get you under the umbrella and get you the health care that you need. And Marissa Evans, the Health and Human Services reporter at the Texas Tribune, you've got your hands full these days.
Yes, it is. I mean, the plight of the uninsured is one of the ongoing storylines that we're facing right now. I mean, even as we report on Maternal Mortality Project, every time any reporter writes anything about the uninsured in Texas, it all comes back to what if we had just expanded Medicaid? And a lot of advocates are still pushing for that. I mean, it's seems like it's not going to happen here in Texas, but that's still an ongoing storyline for us is why didn't we accept the money and what? How many people could have been helped had we accepted that money? Like I said, it's like someone just mentioned, you know, it's a matter of making even just $1 more means you're just not quite poor enough per se to get help from the state. And I think that's just something that Texas is going to have to continue to deal with if we don't expand Medicaid, if we're not thinking about how to expand services or expand programs so that more people in rural parts of the state have access to care.
Jose Camacho, the Texas Association of Community Health Centers. Well, we're hearing about a lot of needs out there, and I know your plate's already full and you're doing the best you can, but, I mean, what about expansion in the future?
If we continue to get the discretionary funds of $1.5 billion, the continuing resolution provided an extra $200 million this year for expanded services, expanded sites, new centers, and in addition, another $200 million in federal fiscal year 2019. So the expansion is going to continue. The services are going to continue to expand. Right now, healthcare in Texas is very complicated. Even if you qualify for some of these programs, you're qualified for a six-month period, and your income is electronically checked constantly to determine if you're still eligible. If you go outside of that income, you can get knocked off. So imagine parents with three or four children that are not coordinated with regard to their eligibility date for the program. And these things are occurring twice a year. That amounts to eight times that individual, that family, has to go requalify.
Jose Camacho, thank you so much. Executive Director and General Counsel for the Texas Association of Community Health Centers. Dr. Carlos Moreno is the Vice President and Chief Clinical Affairs for CommuniCare Health Clinics. And also with us is Marissa Evans, Health and Human Services Reporter for the Texas Tribune. I'm David Martin Davies. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.